on spooky legends past, down through generations, to haunted locations that hold a ghostly past. Come one, come all, come finders and seekers, hear the creepy side of Neva.
Welcome to the creepy side of Neva. I am Dan Kozlowski. Joining us tonight on the creepy side of NEPA is the founder of HauntedAnthracitetales.com, John Walsh. Tonight we are talking about the Hex of Freckville and also some other interesting local legends in that area. John, welcome to the show. Or should I say, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
It's a pleasure to talk with you. You have been one of our regulars recently. Well, within the last few years.
Yeah, I guess this is my third time, and I always have a blast, so I'm happy to be back.
You always have great stories to share.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
How are things going with Haunted Anthracite Tales?
Oh, it's going really well. Last fall, we were very, very busy. I did a bunch of presentations. Smoky Hollow Winery in Ringtown, the Wooden Keg in St. Clair, Pioneer Tunnel in Ashland. I did Big Creek Vineyard up in Jim Thorpe, and you know, even some private parties and everything. So it's been going really well. People like it.
You have been busy then.
Yeah. It keeps me on my toes, but it's fun. It's fun. And the conversations I get to have with people afterwards, it's always a good time.
Well, what we brought you on the show for this time is I noticed there was an influx of listeners in the Freckville area. And as soon as I saw Schuylkill County, I said, you know what? I know the guy to call to see if they know any stories in that area.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not sure what it is about Freckville. Like, I was joking around, it must be something in the water right now that all these people are listening, but I'm ecstatic they are, because born and raised and basically living most of my life in Freckville, I could say wonderful people. And, you know, for a long time, there were a lot of people asking about stories about the town. There hasn't been a lot, but through my research, I've been able to uncover a nice collection of some cool stories.
I know when I tried doing a little bit of research myself here at the station, I came across one that poked up a few times was the legend of the Hex Cat.
Yeah, that actually goes all the way back to 1913 in Freckville, but I think it kind of has its roots even before then. So what happened was in 1909, we had the infamous Jersey Devil, you know, and everyone knows that story about the Jersey Devil and the Pine Barrens.
Had a guest on the show. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, not at all.
I think it was the Lock Haven area. They actually had stories of the Jersey Devil there for a little while.
There were appearances.
Which I thought was crazy.
How about it? Up by Williamsport, up by 80. Yeah, there were appearances of that. And that's actually sort of a part of the tale that I'm going to tell here tonight. But it actually goes into 1911 as well, because in 1911, a very famous occurrence that made newspapers nationwide. It was called the Tumbling Run Hex Cat. And out in that area, what happened was a family, the Howells, or the Thomas family, I'm sorry, Hal Thomas was his name. They were supposedly being terrorized by this Hex Cat that had, if you want to say, like a paranormal basis to it, that they were hexed by it. But that's it's a long story, really. It doesn't have tons to do with Freckville, I think, except for the name, because, fast forward a little bit to 1913, and that's when some weird occurrences start taking place here in the borough of Freckville.
And does that have to do with the cat legend, or is that, like you said, just with the name?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the articles that I was able to find online called it the Hex and the Hex Cat, but realistically, there's no connection whatsoever except for the name. So it's almost like maybe the name piggybacked the Tumbling Run Hex Cat. Mm-hmm. But yet, when you get into the description of what people saw and even kind of terrorized them a little bit in the borough, really has no connection whatsoever.
Interesting. And,
it goes all the way back to September of 1913. And the location was there. It's now the Lincoln Apartments, but at the time it was known as the new high school here in town in Freckville. And one evening, four girls were out walking around, just having a good time in the borough. And they came running home and they blew through the door and they were very upset, out of breath. And when they were questioned what happened, they started telling a tale that just was eye-popping, to say the least. They made the claim that they saw some sort of creature. And this creature was about 3 feet tall, had wings, and almost looked like a horse to them a little bit. And it scared them so much, they went running off and they had to tell their mother and everything. And of course, no offense, but teenage girls, it's night, seeing things, they kind of were discounted for the most part. And people just kind of ignored what they had to say at that time.
Sure.
That is until the very next night when about a block away from that location, it was witnessed again. And this time it was by a young man that was walking home, and he made the claim that he also saw this creature. And the description he gave was kind of similar to what the young girls had seen the night before. So believe it or not, this continued for about 2 weeks, where the people within Frackville were getting visitations by this creature almost every night. And the interesting thing is, it was a slew of people. It wasn't just one or two people. There was even an occurrence in one newspaper that said a very well-respected citizen of Frackville, he was in his home. And as he was sitting at home one night, he can hear this bellowing, like this unearthly screeching outside his door. And he sat there and he would listen to it, but he didn't look outside. He refused. And I get it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I would either.
Yeah. Even peek through the window. I don't know. But some borough people were walking by and they made the claim to see the creature that had been described by the young girls just a couple days before, giving off this unearthly screeching. And when the man was questioned inside his home, he said, absolutely, I heard it. There was no doubt. But it even went as far where one man made the claim that two of these creatures were together one night when he saw them. And it was seen all throughout the town. They saw it at the Lincoln High School, the new high school then, about a block up from it. There was a location known as Wagner's Dam. And for, the people of Frackville, it's basically where the Goodwill Hose Company is now. Okay. Right on Arch Street. And there used to be two, it was called Wagner's Dam, but they were more along the lines of ice ponds. And there were claims that the creature was seen there. There were also claims along the railroad tracks, it could be seen.
And this wasn't like a one and done sort of deal. This was seen multiple times.
It was a huge influx for about two and a half weeks that people were making claims that they were seeing this creature all over Frackville. And it became, an interesting situation, because obviously you had some people that were criticizing the claims, but at the same token, you had mothers that absolutely refused to let their children go outside after dark. So it was, double-edged sword going on there.
Sure.
It was even seen out by, it's known as the Muddy down here in Frackville. There was a claim that it was out there. It's Mud Run. But the interesting thing is, when they talk about the description of this creature, they said it was about 3 feet tall. It had longer back legs, very smaller forelegs, if you will, limbs, very large wings. And when the wings were spread out, upwards of 7 feet, and even the face kind of like a kangaroo. So the description pretty much spot on goes along with the Jersey Devil.
Yeah, every picture or drawing that I ever saw of the Jersey Devil does, that's basically the description right there.
Yeah, and it was a couple years after the influx, in Jersey with the Devil. But it's intriguing because there had been sightings in Pennsylvania up north of us within the last year before that. So the big question is, was it an active imagination, or was the Jersey Devil actually making rounds and getting around the eastern coast?
Maybe he was passing through.
It could be. But it's funny because the people of Frackville, they knew that it was an opportunity too. And believe it or not, there was a group of men that decided they were going to hunt down the animal, and they came up to the conclusion that regular pitchforks and just bats wouldn't do the job. So they went to a powwow doctor and tried to have bullets made of silver and gold, and they were going to try to shoot it. But at the same token, there was a carnival that was coming into town, and a couple businessmen came up with the idea of having a tour. And going around the tour, growing around the town, and actually pointing out the locations where the creature was sighted. So, good stuff.
Sure, they took the opportunity there to make a couple extra dollars at the time.
Yeah, it went so far they were actually going to make a Frackville Hex Club, where the people of Frackville were getting ready to come together and form this club because of this creature.
Well, this was a big deal in Frackville at that time, it sounds like.
Apparently so. I mean, there was even poetry written about the creature, believe it or not. They were celebrating it to a point. But as fast as it came, and terrorized the people, that quickly it seemed to be gone. So within, honestly, two and a half weeks, the newspapers were, it was just an influx of stories and then gone.
Yeah, when I was looking it up online, it looks like there was, like basically, like you said, a few articles in the newspaper and then nothing after that.
Yeah, yeah. Just the very stopped. First one, the very first one was September 4th, and it went up to about the 26th. And after the 26th, it almost became like something people would, they would talk about it, but they would laugh a little bit as well.
Very interesting, especially how it just stopped and never to be seen again.
It's incredible. Yeah, it really is. And the other thing I always found interesting was all the sightings were during the nighttime. So, you know, if indeed it was seen or witnessed by people, I mean, obviously this creature would be nocturnal if it was seen,
right,
of course. But the description that was given, especially the 7-foot-long wingspan, it's intriguing to say the least.
Yep, and all those creatures are always just seen at night for the most part. You never see, you hear of a Jersey Devil or anything like that in the daytime.
Yeah, well, that's when the imagination goes, you know, and that's the time to see it. Out of all the claims, by far, the most, you know, valid one is the one that was on the porch of the renowned citizen, because it was upwards of a dozen people that made the claim that they saw the creature that night.
Yeah, you have that many people claiming they see something at the exact same time, there's something there to back it up.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, could there be a natural, you know, reason for that taking place? Just some kind of animal that, of course, there could be. But yet, the people within this borough just latched onto it, and they were terrorized to the point that it was making newspaper headlines.
Yeah, I never heard of this legend until I started doing a little research, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it a couple years ago, and I did a little snooping into it. Not a ton, but over the last maybe 3 weeks, I really started diving into it, and it's quite a story. It's really neat.
And this is where you grew up mostly, in Frackville?
Yeah. I've been here most of my life, and it's just a nice little community, quiet. You know, even when it was first developed, it was meant to be kind of like a vacation spot for all the coal barons in the area. They would come up. It was like a mini Poconos, if you will.
Interesting.
But they would come up into the mountains, you know, in the woods, and enjoy themselves. And it's a nice little town, you know, good people and fun times.
So I guess this was like one of the stories you heard about when you were little, like someone tried to scare you?
Truthfully, no.
No?
No, I didn't hear this story. The big thing is, around here, we have two locations that I know of. Now, I don't have necessarily like documentation, but it was word of mouth, you know. And
they're the best stories.
Yeah, the word of mouth stories. So the one, and people in Frackville have been talking about this for many years, is our current borough building. And that's, believe it or not, right down the street from the appearances of the Hex, the Frackville Hex. And it was the Frackville School for many years. And then the school ended up moving. And now it's our current borough building. But that building's been there since 1924. And ever since I was a young kid, you know, I always heard stories about someone that had passed away. And most of the time when I heard the stories, it was a cleaning person or a maintenance worker.
Mm-hmm.
Now I really dove in to research. I have never found documented examples of someone passing away in that building, but the claims within that building, people are adamant there's activity. I've heard claims from shadow figures being seen up walking throughout the hallways, voices. The big one is door slams. It seems like door slams are very big within the building. One story I was told, it was a snowy day and, you know, 2-hour delay. It was a school at that time.
Right. Oh, it was a school before the borough building?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was for a very long time. Very long time. I even subbed there for a while. it was a great school. What happened was they had a delay. You know, you had a couple inches of snow outside, no big deal. So this maintenance worker got there early, and he was prepping everything for the students to come and the teachers and the principal. So as is custom, you know, people would come in, there's a back door, and it's kind of like a ramp, and they would come up, and it's a heavy metal door. And when they would walk in, they would kind of walk in, and just the door would slam.
Right. Behind them.
No big deal. So this maintenance worker told me that he was in the school one time. You know, he was down the hall on the first floor, and he hears the door slam, clear as day. So he thinks to himself, okay, I'll walk down, I'll greet whoever it is. It's probably the principal or teacher. So he walks down, and he looks, all the lights are still off. The door's closed, and he's confused because he knew he heard the door slam. He said that he opened up the door, and when he looked at the snow, there were no footsteps. But sure enough, he knows he heard that door slam.
Ooh.
You know, that one, being in that school by yourself at that point, a little creepy.
Yeah, I definitely understand that.
A little creepy. You know, he has said numerous times he's gotten the willies when he's been in there, just kind of that sixth sense going on. There were other stories about blood showing up in an art room, but they're fictitious. That, you know, that was just a cool story told by a teacher. Right now, that's where the police station is within the borough. And there's also a 24-hour gym. And, you know, you hear stories from people kind of leaking out that it's kind of odd, and they're hearing things. And that's been going on for years and years. So it's really nothing new. Mm-hmm. I've even heard with the gym that they've caught, you know, different activity on the cameras.
And this is all in the same building, the gym, the police station?
It is. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I, again, there, from my documentation and research, I've never seen anything about any traumatic situation that took place there or any kind of deaths or anything like that. But
right.
Apparently, you know,
something's there.
Something likes the building. And it's a warm building. You know, it is a nice building.
And there's a lot of times these stories, you just can't explain them. You just can't find any history behind them or anything that would start it.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. I found it really interesting. It was literally right down the hill from where the Frackville Hex took place in 1913. I thought that was kind of neat because where the new high school was at that time, you know, it moved down and mm-hmm. the building I just described became the new high school. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah, and all that little area there.
Yeah. But also within the same area, it's a residential area now. I won't drop the name, just that there used to be a rectory not far from there.
Okay.
And what happened was I started hearing rumors about paranormal activity within the rectory, and I kind of inquired about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that shadow figures, footsteps, you know, hearing voices within the rectory. And it actually got to the point where the rector that was living there refused to live within the building. He actually had
two residences. He had enough.
Yeah, he had enough. And he refused to live there. And it was big. It was about 3-4 stories. But he would leave there and he would go across town and live in a smaller area. And, you know, I inquired. It got to the point that there was almost going to be a paranormal investigation within the building. And at the last minute, it kind of fell through, just, you know, a little worried about the reaction for the higher ups.
But, right.
Yeah. And that story is interesting because there was actually a priest that was buried in the courtyard. He died in 1960, and his final request was to be buried on the grounds where the rectory was. And the body was exhumed about maybe 7-8 years ago and put up in a cemetery in town. But he was there for a very long time.
It seems like that was a common thing back then, the priest buried on the property of the church grounds.
Yeah, it seems that way. I guess an attachment, you know, to the location. And that priest was there for almost 60 years, you know, in death, of course,
right.
Under the ground. You know, when he was actually there, I'm not sure how long he was in the parish, but yeah, I agree with you. That does seem common.
Yeah, I heard of a few churches in the area that still have bodies on the grounds.
Yep, yeah.
And then it's a little creepy, a little eerie.
A little bit. You know, I even remember as a kid, like, cutting grass in that area, and you kind of look down and see the gravestone and thought, yeah. You know, there he is, you know.
Yep, I know. There, so. My church here in Scranton, priest is buried underneath the church.
Really?
So it was on, like, there was two levels to our church. In the lower level, there was, like, a tombstone, I guess you would say, vault thing right up on the corner of the altar.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A little creepy.
Wow, that is a little bit creepy. Yeah, absolutely.
Any other Frackville stories that you sort of remember growing up in the area?
Well, this one, I just kind of came upon this a little while ago. Believe it or not, like, the most famous story in the county is the story of the Broad Mountain Ghost, commonly known as the Gordon Ghost.
Yep, I have heard of that one a little bit. I heard bits and pieces of the story, yep.
Yeah, that goes way back to 1925. And it's a long story, but I'll just kind of, you know, give you a short synopsis of it. In a nutshell, what happened was in April of 1925, a couple, their names were the Duncans, they were up walking on Broad Mountain. And when they were walking, they found the body of a person. And what had happened was this person was kind of semi under a bush, but her body had been burned. You know, so they alerted the authorities. The authorities came up and they came to the conclusion that it was a young girl, probably in the age of about 16 to 20 years old. And the body was burned because whoever had committed the murder was trying to conceal the evidence. They were trying to get rid of it. They doused it with gasoline, set it ablaze. You know, sure enough, a rain cloud comes through and douses it and puts the flames out. So all that was left of the young woman was from her knees down and then her head, basically, and a little bit of her shoulder. So they start doing this investigation, and for approximately 7 years, they had a detective on the case, and they went all over the place trying to figure out who had killed this girl. They couldn't even identify who she was. You know, they went as far as Boston to Detroit, out to Indiana, but they weren't able to figure out who the girl was. So when they first found the body, they decided they needed something so that people might be able to identify her. Well, you couldn't do fingerprints. There was nothing there. You couldn't do DNA. You know, it wasn't even a thing at that point. Or
DNA. Yeah, back then, they didn't have many options.
Right. So they opted to keep the head, and they actually took a container, filled it with formaldehyde, put the head in this large jar, and sealed it. And the doctor that held on to the head, he's very infamous in this area. His name is Dr. Robert Spencer from Ashland. He actually had the head up until 1941. And that way, anyone that felt that they might know who the young lady was, they would come into his office. So he'd go back into a closet, open up the door, bring out the jar, set it down, and then they would view it, you know, and never figured out who it was.
Yeah. And this thing holding on to a head that long. Wow.
What happened was state police got word that Dr. Spencer stole the head. And one day they came knocking and they said, we need the head. So the story is he supposedly made a cast, a mold of the face, but then he ended up handing the head over to the district attorney of the county, and that person handed over the Stadies. But, you know, this went on for years, and we're actually nearing the 100th anniversary, and it's still a mystery. We have no idea who this young lady was. But I came upon an article that just blew me away. So the murder took place in 1925. And like we said, you know, the head, just the feet, but the rest of the body was basically just ashes, just charred. Well, this claimed that there was a young lady by the name of Agatha Bullock. And within the article, it said that when the body was first found, her mother, whose name was Mamie, went and identified the young girl. And they were so convinced that it was indeed Agatha, they kept the head, but they gave her the ashes. And she actually brought the ashes back to her home in Frackville. And they buried the ashes of the girl somewhere within Frackville. In fact, there was actually a grave marker with the name Agatha Bullock. Now, the interesting thing about this was all other newspapers were saying that the identity was unknown. They went through a bunch of different young ladies they thought it was, and sure enough, it wasn't. But yet, the two articles that I found, the first one came out of Lancaster. So I thought, Lancaster, that's pretty far.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there was a mistake or something along those lines. Well, sure enough, while I continued doing my research, there was one from the Pottsville Republican, you know, right down the road from us. It claimed that the remains were of this young girl. Well, the really intriguing thing is they had the remains in 1925. The article came out in 1930. 5 years later, because Agatha showed up at her house. She was alive the entire time. And she had actually been in kind of like a prostitution ring. And she came back to her house and she viewed the grave where supposedly her remains were.
Whoa.
Yeah. So the cool thing is, Dan, I knew what happened to the head. But I was asked a couple of times by people, well, what about the rest of the body? And I made the assumption that the rest of the body was basically just buried maybe in up behind the Schuylkill County Almshouse. It was a potter's field. But yet this article is claiming I'm wrong. You know, it was actually in Frackville. The remains are buried somewhere.
Wow. Imagine burying the body you think, and then they ended up at your front door.
How about it? You know, and even with that, the claim was in the article that there was a gravestone that said her name on it, Agatha Bullock. Now, whether that gravestone is still there or if it existed or if it was on the family plot, I have no idea. You know, I'm not even sure. I know the family moved away. And I know in my research, Agatha had a very long life, good life. She got married and had kids. But as for the remains, it sounds like odds are they're still within the borough of Frackville.
That is a wild story.
How about it? How about it? Out of all the things. And even with that, I've talked to people about doing reverse DNA analysis to try to find out who the girl was. The state police only have to hold on to evidence for 75 years. So for the head, whether they still have it or not, I have no idea. Odds are it's gone. To know that, you know, the town that I grew up in may have the remains of that young lady. I've been hearing that story since I was a little kid. That just blew my mind.
Yeah, like I said, I heard bits and pieces of that story just floating around over the past few years, but
yeah
nothing like that.
I mean, the actual ghost story aspect of it, they claim that the young girl, you know, could still be experienced up there. And the ghost claims started right away where people would hear moaning. They claim that they would see the young lady actually going through the forest. The most common claim is when you're going up the mountain, your car starts to sputter and starts to turn off. Some people have claimed you could see her running across the road. You know, of course, for more extreme purposes, they claim she's on fire, which, you know, the other one is the car, if it turns off, you will continue going up the mountain. So some cool things.
Yeah. Something I heard there's a couple places in that area, in our area, that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely something to check out on a Saturday night, you know, if you have nothing else going on. But it got to the point there were so many people that were going up the mountain, you know, in a couple of years after the murder, that the police had to come in and shut it down because, you know, you would have dozens and dozens of cars. It was impeding everyone's progress. But at the same token, they would go there and for self-protection, they would take guns, you know, and sure enough, shots would be fired. So the cops came in and actually kind of shoot everyone away.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that, especially they're bringing guns.
Yeah. It's a smart move. It's a smart move. But it's quite a story, and it's a very well-known story. I think everybody that lives in the area down here, they've always gone across Gorda Mountain and told the story. So.
Yeah, you had some very interesting stories about Frackville. I never knew Frackville was this interesting with the urban legends and lore.
It's a quiet little town. You would never expect too much. You know, there's always something under the surface, though. I mean, but
it always, you know, surprises me ever since I started this show, the amount of stories in our area.
Right. And it's always cool because even this last summer, I went to a yard sale of all places, and somehow the conversation came up about ghost stories. And the woman that I was speaking to started telling me her own story about how she had experiences in her home, and she lived very close to a cemetery. You know, it's just really neat because it opens up the door for great conversations with people.
Yeah, and even the people who they don't believe in ghosts or they tell you it's all made up, they still have that one story they can't explain.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And even some of the stories, like with the borough building and the rectory, you know, it's all hearsay. And did embellishment take place? Probably. You know, there probably was embellishment over the years. But man, your imagination just goes. You know, and it's just intriguing. And I always like to say, when you go past a location that you're told about, you're always going to do that second look, you know, and just think to yourself, I wonder if something's really there. It's kind of neat.
And if anything else, it's entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Definitely.
And you do learn a little bit of history along the way.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things, like, and that's actually how I started getting into this. I love doing historical research of the area. And lo and behold, you have all these stories that start to come out. And they're just incredible stories. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, John, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show again.
Oh, hey, my pleasure. It's always a joy to speak with you. And hopefully we could do it again soon.
It's a joy having you. And if anyone was wondering or interested in going to your website and seeing some more of your stories, what's your website again?
Yeah, it's www.hauntedanthracitetales.com. I actually have a publication coming out. It should be out by the end of the summer. And I'm doing a second one on the history of the Schuylkill County Prison. So with that one, it's going to focus on executions, escapes, very infamous inmates that we had right here in Schuylkill County.
Very interesting. We'll be looking out for it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Have a great night.
You too.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Creepy Side of NEPA. Thank you for listening to The Creepy Side of NEPA. If you have a story you would like to share, maybe you just have an idea for an upcoming episode, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at ghost@wnep.com, or you could also contact us through our Facebook page, WNEP's Creepy Side of NEPA. Until next time, enjoy The Creepy Side of Nipah.
This has been The Creepy Side of Nipah. If you have a spooky story that took place in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, send it to ghost@wnep.com for your chance to share it on an upcoming episode. We're dying to hear from you.